I'm going to call to order our City Council meeting of March 17th, 2014. It is 6:30, and we are going to begin by standing for a moment of silence, and let's send our thoughts for the families who have been involved in the Malaysian airplane that's missing. And after the moment of silence, we have a flag salute, and tonight that's led by Ethan Samuel Scherer. He is 9 years old. He's a fourth grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. Ethan likes math, language, and physical education at school, and likes living on the Central Coast because of the weather, the ocean being close by, and his family. And it looks like his family's here this evening. We have Mom and Dad and... Dad, Mom and Dad and Grandpa? Great. Thank you for coming. And I want you to feel free to come forward and take photos if you need to. So don't worry about that. Ethan wants to study history, music, and acting in high school or college. He would like to pursue being an actor or a singer when he finishes his education. And Ethan's interests are handball, archery, and swimming. And as we said, he's accompanied by his family. And is the principal here? Nobody else here from the school? Teacher, principal? Okay, great. So, Ethan, why don't you get us started on the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And that's a nice tie. Nice work.
Get rid of the tie.
Thank you, Ethan and Ethan's family. Could we have the roll call, please?
Here.
Here. Here.
Here.
Here. And I believe we're going to start with a closed session announcement, City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. At the last meeting on March 3rd, the Council met in closed session on one item, and that was anticipated litigation, one case. After reconvening into open sessions, it was reported that there were no reportable actions taken in closed session.
Thank you very much. And this is the time that we do our City Council agenda review, and we will review the order of business to be conducted, and we will receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. And we should, by motion, adopt the agenda as presented or as revised. I believe City Manager had something for us.
Yes, Madam Mayor. I'm going to request that the Council actually continue item number 13, the appointment of the planning to the Planning Commission. Mr. Greg Alex was going to be here this evening, but he had to be out of town, and he'd actually like to be here when he's reappointed, and requested that this be continued.
That's great. Were there any other changes to the agenda? Okay, seeing none, I will accept a motion.
I'll move that we accept the agenda with the one exception of or with the correction to item 13.
I'll second that.
Moved by Council Member Nichols and seconded by Council Member Bright. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, unanimously we've taken that one out, and we'll do that another time. So next on our agenda is the ceremonial calendar, and we have a proclamation declaring March 20th, 2014 as Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. And I know we just had an Absolutely Incredible Kid do the flag salute, but it looks like there's some others out there. If you're one of them, could you raise your hand so we can see? Oh, look at all those. I don't want to see the grown-ups' hands. I want to see the kids' hands. That's better. That's much better. No, grown-ups. So I'm going to come out and read this if I can, if Director Petker would give me the microphone there. Or do I use this one?
And I'm
employment opportunities. And also, so your families know, on Channel 20, if you look at the front page of our agenda out there on the table that's there for folks to pick up, it will tell you when we're on television. And you can watch yourself several times in the next couple of weeks, so be sure to do that. And then you can go later and look at it in the city archives, and you can look at it till, you know, for many, many, many years. So this is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring Thursday, March 20th, 2014, Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. Whereas Thursday, March 20th, 2014 has been declared by Campfire USA, a national youth development organization, Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. And whereas Campfire USA will commemorate its annual Absolutely Incredible Kid Day on this date. And whereas, as part of the celebration of children on this day, the adults are encouraged to send letters of love and appreciation to the young people in their lives. And whereas the Campfire USA mission pledges a firm commitment to building caring, confident youth and future leaders, an extension of that commitment is handed to caring adults through this event to express their feelings in a letter or note, which is the profound ability to make a lasting and positive impact on the children in our country. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby proclaim Thursday, March 20th, 2014, in the city of Grover Beach as Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. See if we can get one more good photo with you guys.
He's hiding.
Good job. Thank you. That's super. Thanks, you guys. So, did someone want to come forward and speak about that?
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. I'm Sherry McCarthy. I've been a volunteer with Campfire for 17 years, former leader, and am this year's chairperson for Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. And this on March 20th, we'll be celebrating our 15th year of Absolutely Incredible Kids. And this is a national letter-writing campaign to encourage adults to write letters of love and support and to children in their lives. And I want to thank the council for recognizing the significance of Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. I want to introduce Samantha from our Horizon Club, which is our high school kids, and Ashley and Dana from Ocean View Club, and Miles and Emma from our Grover Beach Club. And they would like to present you with some stationery, some buttons and stickers for you to use on Thursday. And we'd also like to present the council with some campfire candy as a token of our appreciation.
Wow.
And thank you again for this opportunity to bring our event to your attention. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I was a campfire girl for a little while. Does anyone else from the council want to say anything or ask any questions?
I just have a quick question. I believe it's going to be of Samantha. If you could give us just a real brief explanation of how long it took you to get all those badges.
Thank you very much. That's nice.
Well, I've been in Campfire ever since I think I was in kindergarten. And we've done a whole bunch of different activities. And very recently, I think it was last year, we put together our gowns as one of our activities. And we're still earning more badges for doing different kinds of things. And we're going to add more stuff on them, but it's just doing different activities for the community and with our groups.
I just also want to point out, a lot of her emblems that she has on her vest are a lot of community involvement, community service activities that she's participated in. And, you know, we do the Grover Beach Parade, Christmas Parade, the Pismo Beach Thanksgiving dinner. I can't even say. I think hospice cookies. So these young adults are all participating in our community and just getting that community service in their blood. And it continues on.
Thank you so much. And your uniforms are so much more colorful than they were when I was a kid. So I'm just going to see what we've got here. We've got some mint patties and what else is here? Just so everybody knows. Ooh, almond roca. And those will keep us going when we have our closed session late this evening. So thank you very much. Yeah, thanks. That was considerate. So, and thanks for coming tonight. You're all welcome to stay. So next on the meeting, we have public communications, and any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction.
I wanted to put in my 2 cents about the absolutely incredible Kid Day. It's not just for campfire people. Anyone can go online, download the stationery, send a letter to some child in their life. So just want to make sure that that was understood, because that's it's a great thing. I remember doing it with my son when he was younger, and it was it was a positive experience, so it was really great. It helps kids understand how important they are to you, because they hear you yell one day, and then you send them a letter and say, this is how I really feel. So just wanted to say that. I also want to let you know that Campfire is doing a fundraiser this Saturday at Ramona Garden Park. It's a craft fair that's open to the public, and it'll be a bounce house for the kids and kettle corn and a fabulous tri-tip barbecue that you can pre-buy tickets from the Campfire office at on Pomeroy Street in Pismo Beach, or you can just come on the day and purchase them. But it's from 10 till 4 p.m. at Ramona Garden Park. So if you're free, come on by.
Thank you. Thank 10 you. To 4, Ramona Garden Park, Saturday, the 22nd. Perfect. Thank
that
you.
That is some very fun stationery.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Come on up, and if you can give us your name and your city of residence.
Meg Crockett, San Luis Obispo. I am president of Pacific Wildlife Care, and I just wanted to invite the citizens of Grover Beach to learn a little bit more about our organization. We're the only organization that does wildlife rehabilitation in the county. We accept land mammals, birds. Birds are probably 80% of our clientele, and reptiles. And we accept injured and orphaned animals. I have some rack cards, which I'll leave. But if you find an animal, it's 543 Wild is the number to call. We don't get a lot of animals right now from Grover Beach. Would love to get more if they're in need. Of course, you know, not if they're not in need, but we have our rehab facility is in Morro Bay, and we're always looking for volunteers, transporters, phone people, people to work at the center that can help out. We have a full-time veterinarian now that's, you know, wildlife, full-time. I mean, it's great. We've had her for about a year, so that's fantastic. Because not very many rehab organizations actually do have their own veterinarian. We're having a fundraiser on March the 30th. You can sign up to become a volunteer or, you know, find out more about our organization. So I appreciate very much the opportunity to come and tell you about us, and, you know, keep us in mind if you find an animal.
Thank you, and thank you for your service. Did the council have any questions or comments on that one?
Yes, please. You're located in San Luis?
I live in San Luis. Our organization facility is in Morro Bay, but people can call 543 Wild. We try and get people to deliver if they can. If they cannot, we try and find a transporter. And we do still have, we originated with people that, you know, just did home rehab. And in 2007, we managed to get a actual sort of hospital.
Right. I know you were helpful to me at one time. Your organization was
good,
very
good.
Helpful.
Good.
So thank you.
And to me, too. Thanks for all that you do.
Thank you. And I'll leave these on the table over here?
Yes, and then staff can...
One, or you can leave them here.
Leave them on the table so folks can pick them up, and then staff can put them out after that.
Okay.
Thank you. Was there anyone else who wanted to come forward? And we need your name and your city of residence, please. You've got 3 minutes.
Hello. I'm Joseph Holmes of Santa Maria, but Grover Beach has always been my home and always will be. Plan on moving back up here, hopefully soon. But I came here tonight. It's been a while for me since I've been up here. Some of you know me. Some of you don't. I'd like to get to know some of you council members. I'm up here tonight to express a concern I have. that's been going on lately, mainly at Ramona Garden Park. As I wrote a letter to the newspaper on the 12th expressing my concern about some problems going on at the park, very concerning to me and to a lot of people I've talked to, especially the South County Transit drivers and passengers who board there every day. There's a lot of homeless people that camp out there, 10 to 20, maybe more. And we've had a lot of incidents occur that's come to my attention, especially from some of the passengers that a lot of soliciting, a lot of panhandling, alcohol, smoking, harassment to drivers and passengers. This goes on. I want to first say that I have nothing against homeless or feeding the homeless. I'm an advocate of that. My only main concern is that they're at a place where they're always fed. People's Kitchen's been providing sandwiches to them every day at 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock. So they hang out there. They don't read the signs. They still smoke. They're just everywhere. And it's not safe. It's not safe for me. And, you know, it's not safe for a lot of people. And I ride the bus all the time. I'm up here all the time. I've been on that bus for 7 years. And I've seen incidents, and the drivers are really concerned because they got to deal with it. And they're pretty much, and the passengers too. And I've talked to so many people, and a lot of people have, you got a bathroom that's just unusable there. I've seen some, there's a lot of incidents there, a lot of drinking in there. I mean, this goes on all the time. And I just like to have a safe park. And it's a great park for this city. A lot of events every year go around there, but you're waiting at a bus stop and somebody bugs you, and what do you do? I mean, this has gone on for the longest time. I know the People's Kitchen was, relocated. They don't have a place yet, but I just think that park, to me, it's a beautiful park, but I wouldn't even walk up there now. I mean, I've talked to Debbie, and I Jeff emailed me back, and I really want to thank you for that.
I'm going to have to cut you off, Joe. Yeah. Sorry.
All right, but okay.
Thank you very much. And
all right, I just wanted to say that.
We'll address the stick around because thank you. Okay. When we're done with public comment, I think we may have some things to say on that. Is there anybody else who wanted to come forward during public comment? Okay, seeing none then, I'll close public comment, and I think it would be helpful for us to let folks know Joe has complained to me several times about this, and I've passed it on, and one of the issues that we have with the transients and vagrants that are hanging out in the park is that they have a right to be there, as does everyone else, and so together as a community, the council can't do it alone. We need everybody's support on that, so thank you for coming forward with that. Are there any other comments from the council on that or from staff? Any?
It's just that we're continuing to track the issues, and in an appropriate time, the police chief may make a report.
Thank you. So he needs to hear from folks in order to do that. Did you want to say something?
And if I may, Madam Mayor, members of the council, we have set a date of April 8th. It's a Tuesday night for a community meeting regarding the vagrants, and it will be held at Ramona Park Center there at 6 o'clock.
Great.
So again, that's April 8th at Ramona Center there.
That's super. Thank you, Chief. We appreciate your work on that. Okay, so we're moving now to public hearings, and we have item number 2, which is the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center Development Permit Application number 1003. The applicant is Pacifica Companies, and I believe the city manager is going to say something on
Madam
that.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, once again, it's staff's recommendation that we continue this item. The staff has continued to work with both Coastal Commission staff as well as the coastal as well as state park staff in an effort to resolve the issues regarding a condition that the Coastal Commission would like to see applied to that project. That the condition deals with the prohibition of armoring, which is preventing the construction of seawalls, et cetera. We're continuing. There's been progress. I think we're still making movement in the right direction. We're not there yet. So consequently, I'm going to ask that the council continue this for another 2 weeks. Certainly, staff's available to answer any questions that you might have.
So do we need a roll call vote for continuing that?
Open and continue.
Open and continue. And then there's no vote on that? We just move forward with the opening and continuing?
No. Public hearing has...
I have a question.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. The question I have is, as we continue this item, is it necessary and in our best interest to continue it to a date specific, yes, or can we just continue it and once we get a resolution to the problems, we could then schedule it?
The advantage of continuing the public hearing to a date certain is that you do not need to expend funds again on renoticing and publication of the public. Most likely a delay in publishing the notice and in additional expenses.
So, correction, that would be April 7th. Right.
Thank you.
Any other questions of staff?
If none, I will move that we continue this item to April 7th meeting.
Do we need a roll call on that?
I'll second that.
Voice vote is fine.
Okay. So we have a motion by Councilmember Nichols and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous.
For the record,
yes.
For the public, the public hearing has been continued to April 7th at 6:30 p.m. in chambers, and the next council meeting. That will not be republished or renoticed other than the Brown Act agenda.
Thank you very much. So next on our agenda is item number 3, and that's the capital improvement project number 270 West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project Phase 3. And I have a question. I need to recuse myself on this one. I understand that we may be not hearing it. Do I need to recuse myself for that process?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I'm recused because my office and my residence are too nearby. So I'm going to 500-foot radius. So I will be leaving, and I'll be back when we're done. So over to you, Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Thank you for that. And... we have to officially wait.
Yeah, you should.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, before the Public Works Director launches into his report, as you can see, this is a recommendation to basically pull the item. The reason that we're recommending that it be pulled is that we believe that the project may not in fact need a coastal development permit, and we're taking a look at those related issues. We think it meets its basic criteria. So unless you have any questions at this point, I would just suggest that you pull the item from the current agenda.
Does anybody have any questions of the city manager or staff?
None.
No. I'll make a motion that we pull it from the agenda.
I'll second.
That's what we need to do.
So we have a motion and a second. So does that require a roll call?
A voice vote is fine.
Then all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Chief, if you would summon...
chairman of the League of Women Voters, who is really pleased that we list our rules of decorum for every meeting. So that was... thanks. next on our agenda is... the introduction and first reading of an ordinance amending Article 10, Chapter 3 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code to include regulations for state-issued cable television franchises, and it will be City Attorney Kazanowicz reading that for us.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council Members, the item is before you for consideration of an amendment to the Grover Beach Municipal Code. In 2006, the state adopted the Digital Infrastructure and Video Competition Act, also known as DIFCA, transferring the ability to franchise telecommunications from local agencies to the state. The state basically is now the umbrella for those type of franchises. The law provides that once the franchise terminates, the current franchises terminate, then the franchisee, in this, our instance is Charter Cable, would go under the state umbrella. City has the ability to adopt an ordinance which would provide for the receipt of public educational government channel fees, known as PEG fees, which assist in funding the infrastructure for televising the meetings and some of the other expenses related to public access on the cable. What is before you for introduction, the first reading by title, is an amendment to Article 10, Chapter 3, which would install a permissible franchise ordinance within within our city, which would also afford us the ability to attempt to collect the 1.5% PEG fees. I will tell you that the Charter has taken a position that this is not fee, but rather a tax related to property, and therefore subject to Prop 26. So the first step in this discussion, for lack of a better word, or a dialogue, is to move forward, at least on staff's recommendation, with the adoption of the ordinance, and then we'll engage in further discussions with regard to the applicability of Prop 26. This issue is not uncommon. Other municipalities have gone through the same process, and we're still awaiting to see how certain things play out, specifically with regard to Charter. Staff recommends that you introduce, so you will see that the ordinance provides for 1.5%. We're going to do some further research on this, and if that number changes on the second reading and at the next meeting, it'll be adjusted, but it is my belief that that number is accurate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions of City Attorney on this?
Just a quick one, Martin. On you said 1.5%. Doesn't paragraph A say plus 1%? Or am I looking at the wrong paragraph?
It's paragraph F, actually.
Oh, okay.
In accordance with public duty code section.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that.
Bottom of page 3.
Great. Thank you. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Any other questions?
Yes, please. Thank you. I'm a little confused. So then, if I look on my charter bill, am I going to see a PEG fee? Are they being deducted now? Okay, so they're being deducted now, and yet we're not collecting them. The state is collecting them.
At this point in time, I'm not. The state will not be entitled to them.
So
if they are being in fact collected, and I don't know whether they are or aren't, we would be asking to receive them.
Okay. So if they're being collected, but Charter is being hesitant about paying them forward at this point.
Well, at this point, until the ordinance is adopted, okay. We have not engaged in
okay.
Basically, the issue has not come to bear yet.
Okay. When did the when did our franchise agreement with Charter expire?
Our franchise agreement, I believe, expired at July of 13.
Okay. That's close enough. My last question, when you say we'll have a positive fiscal impact, do you know?
I have some kind of a guesstimate? The number is somewhere in the $20,000-$30,000 a year range.
Good. Okay. That's all. Thank you.
So I have some questions, too. I just want to see if I'm understanding the process correctly and make sure the public's understanding it, too. So basically, there's a fee called a PEG fee that's collected by Charter. And the purpose of that is to pay for them to have a franchise to use the right-of-way, and the city takes that fee and uses it for the purposes of the public.
Nope,
still not right.
There's a difference between the franchise fee, which the city will continue to receive through the state, it's paid to the state, and the state then turns it over to the city, which I believe is in a 5% range, if I'm not mistaken. The PEG fee is an additional fee that is specifically designated for the purpose of public educational and government channel infrastructure.
And Madam Mayor, to help with that, it helps pay for the equipment largely that you see in the back of the room and that is needed to broadcast the actual channel itself. And,
right.
And if we did not have those funds available to the city, then the council would have to make a decision as to where to get those funds, most likely the general fund. So this helps us from having to rely on the general fund should the council wish to continue to broadcast publicly.
So it pays for our broadcasting,
right,
is what you're saying. Okay. I think I've got that now. And if there are no more questions, then I'm going to open for public comment. Was there anyone from the public who wanted to come forward on this item? Okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Is there any discussion from council members? Council Mayor Pro Tem Lee? No? Okay. And my only discussion is that I think it's such a good service to have the public television, and so I'm disappointed that Charter is taking that view, and I'm hoping that they aren't, and I would ask them to join us next time and talk with us about it if they have something to say. And I'll accept a motion at this point.
I'll make a motion that we introduce the ordinance. We've already had the public hearing, and have the first reading of the ordinance by title only, and schedule the second reading and adoption for the next regularly scheduled council meeting.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Lee and a second by Councilmember Bright. And this is a roll call vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Roll call,
oh, roll call. Did I say roll call? And then I said, yeah. Sorry. City Clerk?
Yes, I'll go.
Yeah, we did it, too.
We did. We followed along. Like
Simon says.
Yes.
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 Of weed abatement. In brief, the Five Cities Fire Authority, by your designation, has been appointed as the enforcement agency for the abatement, weed abatement in our city. Similarly, the same has taken place in Arroyo Grande and Oceano, the other two jurisdictions that are within Five Cities Fire Authority area. The purpose of it is to standardize the process, provide for, to the extent possible, the same timelines, and basically the same method of abating the nuisance created by overgrown weeds. The ordinance is not identical, very, very similar to the ones that were adopted by the other two jurisdictions. With that, I'll submit and answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the city attorney?
I just had one quick one. This was basically a cleanup item from last year, if I remember having the weed abatement discussion with, I don't think it was Chief Hubert at the time, I think it was Chief Arenas, but that basically this was, we needed to try and get all three entities into some semblance of consistency.
That is exactly correct. Last year, because the season came up on us faster than I guess anticipated, there was not enough time to standardize the process, so it's before you today.
Okay. Any other questions?
I would like to comment that not only does it standardize the process for all three of the agencies, Rio Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano, but it also is a method of cutting down on cost. This helps keep this organization on an economical basis, which we have tried to do since we have formed the authority. And this is just another one of the moves that the chief has instituted so that we can keep the cost down as to each of the agencies.
Thank you for that comment. I do have one question, actually, because as I recall, a couple of years ago, it was significantly more expensive to get this process done. So just wanted to check in and confirm that. I don't know if that would be staff or Council Member Nichols, but
Chief,
it used to be.
Yeah.
The chief is here. Let's ask him if you
chief
would.
Chief Hubert, would you mind coming forward?
Sorry, Chief.
Can't let you come
almost
and not
got
work.
You, got you. Don't be so comfortable.
So my question was, I recall a couple of years ago being really amazed at how much less expensive it was when you all started up your Five Cities Fire Authority, and I wondered if you could comment on that. Do you remember that? Might not have been you.
Well, it should have been for us is alleviate the issue of going to have the same process in each jurisdiction. So we only have the two hearings that need to be done in front of the Five Cities Fire Authority Board. So the cost should be kept low because it's an economy of scale.
So would it be right then that the person who benefits from this is the person who doesn't manage to get their weeds cut down, their costs are less expensive now. Is that right, or does it cost the city less also? The fees go...
The weed abatement contractor works under an agreement that we structured last year, and so it really behooves the residents to get out and do their own weed abatement. I mean, we're not in that business. We do that because the residents or property owners don't do that in a timely manner, and we abate the hazard. So we do it as cost effective. We don't make a profit on it. It's at our cost to abate those hazards.
And then you charge. Do all of your costs get met by the folks who don't cut their weeds down? Fees. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a full cost recovery.
Great. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Yeah. Actually, I just had one question. It really has nothing to do with the ordinance, but just since you're standing there and it's probably 2 months away, what's the deadline for having your weeds abated before it goes into your process?
Well, we haven't set the timeline up officially, but we have to kind of work backwards, because what happens is if people don't abate their weeds and we go out and we have to perform that function for them, then it could end up on their tax rolls. And so that has to be, that date is in August, that those, we have to notify that the county assessor of putting it on the tax roll. So we're working backwards from there. Arroyo Grande just adopted this ordinance. I'll be in Oceano at their next meeting to ensure that we get, even though they follow the same government code process, health and safety code, we just need to have their board give us authorization to perform that functions. So we do all that at a Five Cities Fire Authority meeting. So to answer your question, notice that the inspections usually start in mid to late April for inspections of the properties. So the weeds should be cut by sometime in late June.
Public comment. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to come forward on this? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Any discussion or a motion?
I'll move that we conduct the first reading by title only of this ordinance, conduct a public hearing, and schedule the second reading and adoption for the next regularly scheduled city council meeting.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Nichols, a second by Councilmember Marshall, and this is a roll call vote.
Yes.
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 Thank you very much.
Unanimous again. Thanks, everybody. We now are coming to our consent agenda, and these are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. The recommendations for each item are noted in parentheses on your agenda. Members of the audience may speak on any items listed on the consent agenda. Any council member, city attorney, or city manager may request that an item be withdrawn from the consent agenda to allow for full discussion, and items that are withdrawn will be placed and heard at the end of the items previously scheduled on the regular business schedule. I've had two speaker requests on item number 8, and so we will pull that one and place that at the end. Are there any other items on the consent agenda that the council would like to pull?
Yeah, Mayor, I'd like to have us pull item number 10.
Okay, great. Any others?
No.
Okay, so numbers 8 and number 10 will be heard at after the end of our regular business, and so we'll need a motion for items 6, 7, 9, and 11.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items 6, 7, 8,
No, not eight.
No, 6, 7, 9, And 11. Thank you. Takes a village.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
So we have a motion from Councilmember Bright and a second from Mayor Pro Tem Lee. And we'll do a roll call on this one, too.
Yes.
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 Yes. Moving now to regular business, we have a special guest with us tonight. And, it looks like maybe not. We do have a guest. Yes. Visit San Luis Obispo request for funding and presentation regarding a tourism marketing district, and I think will be led off by City Manager right. Peralt.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, you're indeed correct. We have with us tonight the executive director from $5,369. Last year it was $5,443, so it's gone down actually a little bit. Just by way of background, Visit SLO is a nonprofit which promotes San Luis Obispo County through advertising, marketing, and public relations programs. I'm sure you're familiar with Savor the Central Coast. That's also another partnering activity that the city has been involved with over the last few years and has been sponsored by Visit SLO. Staff actually suggests that with this part of the component, the council direct that the budget request be incorporated as a part of our regular budget review process, which will occur throughout the rest of the spring. In terms of the tourism marketing district, this is the first that the council's received a presentation on the district. It's focused on raising the income for Visit SLO from today's budget of $904,000 to a little bit more than $3 million. And the intent is to make the area more competitive with other areas that are attempting to attract tourism. Ms. Jacob, in a few minutes, will take you through it, but it would be governed by a 15-member board, and it really would be the hoteliers assessing themselves, if you will. A couple of issues that I just outlined in the report that as you listen to this, you may want to think about. It is our understanding that once the district is in place, we would forgo the contribution from to the general fund of roughly $5,000 a year. That would be replaced by what they're collecting from the individual lodging facilities, which would be substantially more, and I'm sure Ms. Jacob will cover that. Currently, the Mayor Pro Tem has a place on the Resource Council, and once the district is in place, it appears, at least from the materials that I've seen, that the Resource Council would be eliminated. That's not to say that representation would come on the board from primarily the lodging industry. The creation of the district would create a significant, Ms. Jacob provides you, and get a little bit further on down the road in what will ultimately be a decision-making process. So with that, I'll go ahead and introduce Ms. Jacob.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you all very much for some time today on your agenda this evening. Want to run you through this, clarify a couple of the questions that were brought up, and then, of course, address any questions that you have tonight. So as City Manager had mentioned, we are looking at a new tourism marketing district. And the primary purpose of this is to ensure that we can maintain our competitiveness with our competitive set overall. When we took a look at our competitive set being Sonoma, Napa, Monterey, and Santa Barbara counties, as we stack up, we are being highly outspent overall against these other competitors. This just gives you a quick overview of really how the tourism model really works here in the state of California and really in the nation. We are very fortunate that our nation has allocated dollars to help increase tourism coming from international markets, choosing Brand USA first and foremost. We have a very, very robust statewide organization called Visit California, spending $50 million a year primarily in international markets because we know the value of the international tourists coming to this area. Then on the Central Coast, we have a regional tourism group called the Central Coast Tourism Council that's really trying to leverage more and more of these international guests, spending not just an overnight but full-on itineraries. It's pretty interesting on some of the trade shows we went to recently in markets like China. They are not only just making their first trips, but they're ready to make their second trips, and they're ready to look at rural California. We have a huge opportunity in some of these markets right now. Then we look at Slo County. This is the area, this is the circle of reference we're really talking about tonight. How do we properly fund this circle of influence to ensure that we can get more folks to your city and, of course, to our individual retail partners? The first request tonight is our annual funding request. There's a two-part strategy here. We need to come to you now asking for our annual funding, but at the same time, we're coming to you and letting you know that we're trying to fix this tourism model. We think that a more robust tourism funds into tourism is good for local communities and good for San Luis Obispo County. So as mentioned, this is our taxable rents formula that we've focused on in the past. The request to Grover Beach this year is $5,369. Your TOT went down last year. It's not a good thing that your request is lower. This is an opportunity that we need to all work on together. So, yes, it's lower dollars for you, but this is not a good news story for you. This just takes a look at, and I know these I'm going to start to go through these a little bit quicker because some of you have seen these slides. This takes a look at our competitive. We do not believe that this additional 1% will overtax the consumer, which I know is a concern out there that we want to address first and foremost up front. This also notes that our competitive set has collective countywide business improvement districts that they have put in place as early as back in 2005. This model is a proven model. We have seen it work in other communities. It is something that our county must address to be competitive in the future. So our county about 5 years ago took a look at this model and felt that it was best at that time to look at the community level, not looking at the countywide level. And so we do have various BIDs. We have seven of them, to be correct, in our community. I think Grover Beach is not yet there having an official BID, but every other community does have that. That really, as you see, began in 2009 at the decline of the recession that did the economic downfall that occurred. And so we are looking at a way people came together and said, let's correct this, and we're seeing those numbers as we move forward. So what does that mean in terms of total tourism spend in our county? We have about almost $6 million that we spend in tourism marketing in San Luis Obispo County. Seems like a lot of dollars, right? Well, the way we've chosen to do that is in silos in our individual communities. Rather than collecting those dollars, figuring out how we best collaborate and move forward in that sense. There's great work being done at the community level, so what we're saying is, how do we fix this piece of the pillar and have a more robust countywide effort so that we can really complement and coordinate better with our communities and in the end be more competitive with our competitive set? This shows you essentially how the tourism dollars stack up against county to county. Now, I'm just looking countywide marketing, not including. The next chart's going to show you what everybody, those roll-up dollars. But $2.6 million in Sonoma, Santa Barbara over $4 million, Napa $5 million, Monterey $5.7 million. Visit San Luis Obispo is not even in a million-dollar range. You are missing a huge opportunity as you look at your number one as your number one industry in our county. This gives you a sense of that roll-up spending. This gives you a sense, the blue line is that consistent line looking across. This shows you other communities do have individual BIDs. We've got a really great rainbow effect going on here down in San Luis Obispo County. Again, it's not that we don't have the dollars, it's how we've chosen to spend the dollars. So we believe there's greater collaboration that can happen overall. Currently, our communities are assessing themselves anywhere between 1, 2, and 3%, depending on the community needs. Our proposal moving forward and is our task force, which I should mention, is made up of over a dozen people that really represents the private and public sectors, have really helped form what this plan can be. And we're going to get into the governance structure to answer overall. So what is the impact on the guest? What would this influence the guest by? We're talking about $1.24. So right now, we took the average daily rate of 2013 that our guests are spending in our hotels countywide. We looked at what the TOT, that 9.7% that I mentioned, if currently a BID, if you're assessing at 2%, just to take the higher level here, which is the average in our community, and then what a new tourism marketing district at 1% would be. $1.24, not even the cost of a latte, is what we're asking here for the guest to move into a collective marketing fund. Again, as we look against our competitive set, we're still, our average daily rate is still quite competitive against our competitive set down here. So probably what's going through your head is, okay, well, that maybe sounds like a good idea. What the heck are you going to do with all those dollars? How can we move that forward? So I'm going to just briefly go over our Tourism Marketing District Strategic Marketing Plan. This was launched to our constituents on January 17th at our annual Vision Tourism Workshop. We had about 150 tourism marketing folks in the room to really take a look at the overall vision, mission, and values. We believe that we can establish San Luis Obispo County as the premier Central Coast tourism destination and a leader in California tourism overall. To do that, our mission is to increase revenue by positioning, branding, and promoting our county as a preferred destination for regional, national, and global visitors. And our guiding principles or our core values, number one and foremost, economic growth. That is how we have to measure success by this. What I didn't mention, this would be a five-year plan that you'd put in place. It has very specifics in here, annual reports that have to be done. There is a 30-day period in this process in which people can protest if they don't want it to move forward. So there's a lot of teeth in this plan to be able to look at what we can accomplish over 5 years. Collaboration is the second most important core value moving forward. We've got to collaborate with all of our community partners to really make this successful. Of course, integrity, leadership, and something that we here in San Luis Obispo see really important, which is quality of life. The five-year plan has really two key goals. One is to increase demand of our county destination. We can measure that very clearly by TOT revenues, but we have to do that in concert with our strategic and community partners. The second goal, in order to increase that, we have to increase awareness overall of our destination. That's the whole brand of marketing tools that we use to increase that awareness. Three key objectives. The first is to expand the destination by accelerating our competitiveness, reaching new domestic markets, reaching other international markets of the strategic marketing plan, and working with our partners. This is that true collaboration that I'm speaking about. We talk about this a lot, and it's really serious that we have to look at how we not only talk about collaboration, but truly collaborate. And that's a little bit of faith and a little bit of work to kind of make that happen. And we're hoping that we can move forward in that aspect. Then a new objective, which is something that we really do not have the budget to do, which is working with our industry resources to provide research-driven education, help educate our tourism marketers in our community to be better marketers and make sure that our dollars are truly working for themselves and measure those dollars against a common set of metrics. One of the very key things that we would do under the research is look at a common set of measurable metrics between the counties and the communities so we're all moving the plan forward together, working off the same milestones. Of course, our strategies is to leverage our key assets, develop our target audience and niche markets, work with our tourism partners, build upon the marketing toolkit that exists using innovative technology-driven tools, integrate our group and leisure sales outreach, particularly in the shoulder season. We know it's really easy to fill rooms here June, July, and August. We've got to really work hard to fill them November, December, January, and February. And of course, create that industry suite of tools, those research-driven facts that I had mentioned. Who wouldn't want to come to the culinary, coastal, and cultural mecca of the Central Coast? This gives you a sense of what we'd be looking at. A lot of people say, what does your team structure look like? This is our staffing model that we currently have. The proposal on the table is to continue with this staffing model and work with the new board of directors that would look at, do we hire additional team members? Do we look at contractors? How would we put this whole thing together? The budget allocation, this just gives you a sense of what's currently in our budget in these particular practice areas, what our new proposals would be. Of course, this can evolve, but this just gives you a sense. And the key takeaway here is this big section of the pie, this 33% in advertising, does not exist today. We don't have the dollars to be able to do a robust advertising campaign that we currently have. All these other areas, we try to touch a little bit. We would, of course, enhance those. And this area called industry research that we talk a lot about, it would be a new area in this plan as well. Just to give you a sense of the timeline of the Tourism Marketing District, this effort really started in November with bringing an expert, John Lambeth, with Civitas Group. He has worked with 60 of the 80 BIDs in the state of California. John Lambeth actually helped write to the 94 Act of the BID law, or Business Improvement District law, that's out there. We're currently in our outreach phase. Our goal is to get out and communicate and bringing a resolution to you saying that your community wants to be part of this Tourism Marketing District. Then there's a hearing process that takes place. place. We believe that will happen towards the end of summer. So it's really almost an annual, about a 12-month time frame that we're talking about here. But wanted to let you know that we feel that we're a good third of the way through this plan, this timeline to achieve this plan. To talk about the governance structure and to talk about just a few pieces here, what the task force has asked is this would be a 15-person board of directors, and that each board member must represent an assessed lodging business. That way, it's driven by the sector that's essentially collecting the funds. One of the pieces that's come up through feedback, specifically from the city manager group, is adding in a new advisory board to this structure. Our board of directors will be looking at that actually at our meeting on Wednesday and looking at an advisory board that would be made up of giving each community a public representative to be on that advisory board, giving us a checkpoint twice a year to be able to check in with that particular sector. Our board would be obviously have your typical serving 3-year terms. It'd be a self-appointed board through the board that's there. The officer team of 4 persons, your chair, vice chair, treasurer, and secretary. This is a little hard to read, but what we would do in that 15-person board is first and foremost designate seats from each community that could be have those assessed lodging partners in that community. So for example, depending on how your community wanted to do it, you could choose who that assessed lodging partner representative would be for your designated seat for Grover Beach. So you would have a voice on the board made up of these first 8 seats. So keeping parity across the county, allowing each community to have one assessed lodging partner there. In addition, because we have a unique, we have beautiful hotels, B&Bs, vacation rentals, and RV parks, we would also ask one representative of vacation rentals, one representative of B&Bs, one of RV parks. That would leave 4 open board seats. So if you had more people in your community who wanted to run, you could essentially run those particular seats. Those second set of seats, those 7 seats, would then be, they would apply to a nominating committee, and that nominating committee would vet the candidates and forward a recommendation to the board. And what our board has asked is that the nominating committee would recommend the slate to the board, ensuring diversity of geography and taking into consideration the assessment contribution overall. So whether we believe this is hopefully the most fair.
Are there any questions?
I'm just trying to absorb it all at this point.
It's a lot of information. It is. Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah. First of all, the structure that your team structure that you talked about. Right now, the Slow Visitors Bureau has how many employees?
It's that structure that you see on there, 6 employees.
6?
Mm-hmm.
And with this new program,
We are recommending is that we move forward with the structure that we currently have and then work with the new board of directors as they allocate dollars spent to determine if those would be contractors or full-time staff. That's a discussion that's currently happening that we don't have resolution on right now, but there's no impetus to increase the number of staff right off the bat without truly looking at the practice areas and the goals and objectives that would be met.
Okay. I'm not convinced, and I don't expect to be convinced tonight, but I got the impression that you're comparing how much the San Luis Obispo County puts forth in advertising tourism compared to the other 7 or 8 counties that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the correlation just because they spend more money. I didn't see any figures on the fact that they get more money as a result of what they spend. So asking to spend more money on tourism, advertising, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have more visitors. So I don't see a real correlation there.
So just to answer that question, the first chart I showed did show you the trajectory of the 10-year TOT of the other communities, and you will see their overall collection of TOT is higher. Of course, they have different asset pools. We do have further information that actually Representative Lee has been part of to look at the detail of that competitive set as we go into each. There is a correlation of more dollars being spent on marketing is actually growing the pie overall. And that's what we're really talking about. As we have more rooms, more opportunity, we want to grow the pie and the awareness overall so we can bring more visitors to San Luis Obispo County.
Okay. Have you made this presentation before any of the other cities?
We have. Mm-hmm.
Any indication as to how acceptance, are they accepting this or what?
We are gaining momentum and continuing to work through the process. City manager and the mayor have given us their support, as has their tourism marketing board. Atascadero, their tourism marketing board has given us their support, and we're working through the process right now in Morro Bay. So we're out in all of the communities going through that process.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you have a question?
I just have some comments, so we can hold those until.
Yeah, we'll hold those till after. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. I did have a couple of questions. So it looked to me like when you were showing a chart of all of this spend that we actually, our spend isn't totally uncompetitive when you include the other BIDs.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
So what would happen to the other BIDs then if so much money comes in to Visit SLO? Will they still stay in place, or are you proposing that you do that work instead?
No, we're proposing that the individual community BIDs stay in place. We believe that there's a threshold with many of them, for example, are collecting 2%. There's a threshold for an additional 1% that would go to the county, giving us an opportunity to work closer together with the opportunity of more funds there to be able to do things instead of begging and borrowing for dollars. So what we're saying is keep the good work that's going on at the community level happening. Let's now fulfill that circle in the first chart that I showed that really helps provide the streamline effect from the nation, from the state, from the Central Coast to the county overall. Because that, what the individual BIDs are not as focused on is how we connect the dots across the communities. They're very focused on their individual communities. What our job is how do we collect the dots in terms of the assets that are happening? Because we know that the tourists coming into our area is not bound by geographic political boundaries. They are truly looking at the fact that they want to go to the dunes, they want to go to the beach, they want to go to wine country, and they want to go to Hearst Castle, and all of that can happen here in our county. So by working together, we believe that we can increase the average length of stay.
And would you still be coming to us for the Savor of the Central Coast with marketing opportunities that the city would fund?
We would. Our board has been very specific from the beginning of Sunset Savor the Central Coast that this is a marketing event that should be operated separately and wholly contained within itself. And we've always operated it on a separate set of books, separate set of funding. And so our board has asked us that we continue that so that with these new dollars, we're not just funding things that we currently have. We're truly looking at new opportunities.
Thank you. And I had another question, and I've forgotten what it was. Oh, so on representation, are you saying that the city will be choosing the hotel representative to the board?
So in each of the other communities, there is currently a business.
Okay, seeing none, we're going to bring it back to the council. And Mayor Pro Tem Lee, you had some comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you, Stacey, for that presentation. I've seen that several times, and the knowledge sinks in each time, and you get better spoken every time I hear it. So nicely done. And as the representative for Visit San Luis Obispo, my personal thought is that we get a lot of benefit from Visit San Luis Obispo that we have not put a lot of monies into it because we have such a small TOT. So as I've said on occasion, we would kind of be the coattails of this process because it gives us an opportunity as our number of hotel rooms increase. The amount of monies that comes from the community is not going to become overwhelming for that. And yet the amount of energy and the amount of resources that Visit San Luis Obispo has already in place under Stacy's leadership with regards to just last year they rolled out this amazing website, which has a lot of the ability to grow and to improve the marketing opportunities in the county already. Go to visitsanluisobispocounty.com, and Grover Beach actually has a page where you could, is it Jackrabbit, where you actually go through and you can actually book a room through Jackrabbit right into a hotel of Grover Beach. And so we get a lot of benefit from this organization that would continue, and it's a perfect opportunity for our lodge to utilize that service to move forward. And one of the ancillary benefits of Savor that we were talking about earlier is, even though it is a standalone event, standalone books and so forth, it has a carryover effect. At one of the last meetings, it turned out that I think November was one of the highest TOT months for Pismo. And you can possibly make a correlation that was almost a direct effect of Savor, for people seeing, okay, they've got an event there, oh, I can't go then, but let's go in November, let's go in another month. So it basically continues that benefit there. And then to even step back further, Stacy mentioned the Visit California organization that does that. We actually have at least two, remind me and correct me if I'm wrong, Noreen Martin and Jay Jamison sit on the Visit California board. So we have representation locally that's already risen up to the state.
Thank you. Any other comments? No. I remembered what my question was, and I think this is one for staff. So in the event that we have a Visit Slo County BID, as it were, who collects the income and passes it on, and is there...
Well, first of all, and maybe Stacy can help with this, it's a countywide bid. So the dollars would flow to the county and then to Visit Slo. Is that how it would work? Which would be a bit different than if you had a local bid, and that's why I wanted to make that distinction. If you had a local bid here in town, those dollars would flow back to the city, and then the city would have an advisory body or a group that would be responsible for the marketing program. That's the way most of the other cities have done it.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time and for coming out tonight. And I believe this one is a receive and file. Where am I here? No, it's a voice vote. So we do need a motion about budgeting.
Yes. Actually, my recommendation was to direct staff to incorporate the request along with the other budget considerations later this year. And actually, I had no recommendation regarding the T-bid, and thought it best just to hear the presentation and to think about it. I'm sure that it has a ways to go before it'll be brought back for you, in front of you, for later consideration.
Thank you. I did have a few comments on that. I sat on Visit Slo, and I Slo County, I love what they're doing, and it's just a great organization. I think it's interesting. I believe we're the only city whose TOT went down, and I think that may be a very good argument for having a BID, because we're also the only city that doesn't have a business improvement district, and in this, with the economy improving, going down doesn't seem right to me. So that may be an argument for that, but it's also unfortunately not a great argument for Visit Slo, because it means that we're not getting better we're not getting a bang for our buck there, perhaps. But it's a very tiny little statistic, and so we may not be able to draw that conclusion. On the other side, the good side is that the funds come from the hoteliers, who are probably best placed to take to make the decisions about market. Opposed? All right. That one's unanimous. Thank you for your time. And next on the agenda is authorization to enter into we're not doing the appointment to the Planning Commission. Right. That's moved to the next meeting. So we're now at number 14, which is authorization to enter into an agreement with Fairbank, Maslin, Mullen, Metz, and Associates to conduct an opinion poll. And again, we have City Manager Perrault presenting.
Yes, Madam Mayor and members of the Council, as you recall, in January, you undertook a very important discussion regarding the future strategy to be used in the rehabilitation of the city streets. You reviewed several concepts and approaches to accomplishing the rehabilitation, and at the end of that discussion, you really provided staff with a couple of directions. One of those directions was to, and you'll hear in a little bit from the Public Works Director, was to update the pavement management program. And the purpose of that was to get a better and more complete handle and understanding, if you will, of what the costs are today in terms of actually repairing the street. The other direction that you provided staff was to retain a consultant for the purpose of conducting a public polling. The city has used public polling in the past. We've used it in 2006, just before we did the half-cent sales tax adjustment, and actually going back to 2004 with the utility users tax that the city adjusted at that time. The important part of polling is if the council moves forward with a general obligation bond, that financing mechanism would be obviously restricted to the repair of the streets. It would require two-thirds majority vote in order to succeed. That's not easy to achieve. And so consequently, you need to have the assistance of public polling to determine whether or not the general public tends to support that kind of a measure before you actually go ahead and place the item on the ballot. So we went out to retain a polling consultant, and as you can see in the staff report, we solicited proposals from a number of firms, public issues as well. I've got to say that all four of the raters rated FM3, which is the abbreviation for Fairbanks, Moslin, Mullen, Metz, and Associates, as the top performer. One of the reasons that they were selected is because they had the best understanding of the scope of work that was sent out in the request for proposal, and that's also been attached. But also, they're very familiar with the community, having provided the services in 2006. It was before I came here, so I was unaware that they were actually the polling firm that we use. But based on the fact that they were familiar with the community, that gave them, in essence, a leg up. Also, costs were a strong consideration, but obviously not the only consideration. And in this case, found that their proposal actually fit within the $20,000 allocation that the council had made at mid-year to perform this work. What I'm asking tonight is that the council would authorize the city to enter into an agreement with the firm. The agreement would be based on the proposal as the scope of work that you see before you. Would include all of the steps and the time frames outlined in the proposal. Essentially, what we'd be looking at is working with the firm in developing the questions that would ultimately be used in the survey. We're looking for a survey time of roughly May, and we're looking to dovetail that survey and make use of what's coming out of the pavement management program in order to package different scenarios that will be tested by the general public. It's going to be a tight time frame. I'm absolutely going to tell you that right up front. The consulting firm is going to be ready to go with your authorization, and that and getting the information from pavement management system all to dovetail will be very critical. We need to be out in conducting that survey by late May in order to be able to present back to you a complete a package of both the polling. Adam Sonnenschein, and he'd be willing to answer any of the questions that that you have specifically about polling and the approach and all of that. And I'm certainly available to answer any questions that you may have regarding the process or the procedure in terms of staff's recommendation. But staff would recommend that you enter into the, or authorize the staff to enter into the agreement with this firm And as alternatives, you could amend the agreement in some form or provide us with additional direction. But this is our recommendation is to retain this firm. And that concludes my staff presentation.
Thank you very much. Are there questions of staff or the consultant?
Yes, please.
Please, then.
Thank you. I imagine this would be for the consultant. I'm not sure.
Did you want to come forward? Yeah. Thank you. Here's good.
Hi. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a my first question is regarding the framing of the ballot summary and title, mm-hmm. Use of the funds in the educational statements. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the heart of the survey will be to test the what we would suggest as potential ballot measure language is, you know, you have a 75-word title and summary that appears in your voter guide. We would work with the city staff in their direction to put together language that we can test to replicate that experience for the people who are receiving the survey. And so after we do that, we then want to show them some of the some of the messaging that we would anticipate would be occur during the campaign process, and so that we can see if there's a change in the opinions of voters or if they're very much set in their ways based on what they hear on that ballot statement. We may also test some of the opposing arguments so that we understand what the vulnerabilities are for the city if they do go forward with this process.
Okay, I see. All right. So, and you found that has been very successful.
Yeah, that's the approach that we use throughout the state and really throughout the country. We do hundreds of surveys like this a year, mostly for municipal government, school districts, community college districts, mm-hmm. and that's really the format that we think is most effective. We try to
5.7% at the 95% confidence level.
Yeah,
I don't understand what the. Can you explain?
Sure, that sure. So I'm going to try to do this without sounding we're going to statistics class. But essentially, if we were to do the survey 100 times, we would be 95% of the time the results would be within 5.7% of the actual results if we were able to go and ask every single person in the city. So we're not able if we were able to ask every single person, it wouldn't really be a sample, it'd be the population, right? We take a sample, and based on our statistical awareness of the sample size compared to the population size, we're able to say with a high degree of certainty that the sample that we took reflects the population within 5.7 points on any given question. Does that answer
yes,
your question?
It okay. does. I just didn't understand the confidence level.
Got it.
I just didn't get that. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think just one last question.
Sure.
And that is, how many calls is it going to take to get 300 responses?
Yeah, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot. We've found over the years that that response rates have dropped. We used to be able to do about 40 calls for every single completed survey. That went up to almost to double as people shifted to more cell phone-based telecommunications instead of landlines. What we're now doing fairly regularly is, in addition to the registered voter file, which has a phone number when the person registered, we're also purchasing lists of phone numbers that we can match to that,
right,
to give ourselves a better chance, and that's brought the response rate down. It's hard to say how many calls because we'll be calling an individual multiple times. It's one of the reasons we didn't want to go over 300 people. The number of calls it would take to get there would, A, drive up your costs, and, B, you probably get a few more complaints from people who say the pollsters won't stop calling because I haven't said yes to take their survey yet. So that's it's hard to say an exact number of calls, though.
But you're saying it could take, like, up to 40 calls?
Yeah, it will take roughly 2 weeks' worth of phone calls.
I saw that in your
to reach
your
that
timeline.
300 number. Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Did you have a question?
I just had one follow-up question.
I have one other now.
Sure.
Which is kind of I thought of it. This is a huge subject in mm-hmm. our town,
yeah.
and people are very interested in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that that would maybe people would be more prone to want to be involved in a survey as a result of that?
It's possible. It's very possible. It is helpful to have an issue that is on people's minds. We try not to give away the topic too early in the survey because
oh,
we want to give. We have some questions about their general perceptions of the city, and we don't want to sort of get them thinking right away we're going to talk about streets and sidewalks. We want to get general impressions. But I think as we get in, yeah, I have a feeling we may have some people who we have a hard time getting them to hang up the phone.
You probably will. Oh, I see. So you're not just going to, you won't identify and say, we want to talk to you.
Usually we don't
streets.
Do that. Usually we present ourselves more anonymously, saying we want to get to ask you questions about issues in your community.
I see. Okay.
We will probably ask them to rate the importance of repairs to streets compared to other issues in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't want to start and tell them we're going to call and talk to you about streets and then ask you that question.
Gotcha. I understand.
Does that help?
Yes, it does.
Great.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Councilmember Nichols.
First question, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, sure.
I know that there are an awful lot of organizations that use the robocalls now,
mm-hmm.
which seems to me an awful lot of people have been really turned off by phone calls.
Yeah.
To what extent has that affected your business insofar as making telephone surveys?
Yeah, so we don't use robocalls. We use live right. phone callers.
Yeah.
So that helps a great deal. I think just the general proliferation of marketing calls makes people less interested in picking up the phone and more likely to screen it and let it to go to voicemail and things like that. It's hard to say specifically robocalls, but we don't, I should say again, we don't use that. It's
well,
gonna
no,
be
I know you
person
didn't,
on the other end.
But that
yeah.
has probably affected.
I'm sure it has, yeah. I'm
so
sure
many
has.
People now look at who is calling, and if they don't recognize it,
they're not interested.
They're not interested.
Yeah.
So it probably has made your business a little more difficult.
I'm sure it has.
Okay,
sure
the second question I have is I couldn't find it while I was reviewing this,
mm-hmm.
but city manager mentioned that time was of the essence and that we had a very small window here. And yet, if I'm not mistaken, in your proposal, did you not state that you could actually start a little misleading?
It'd be very misleading. We wouldn't be giving you very good information. So at the same time, vice versa. We don't want to ask people 50 if it's really 10. So we would like to have some real data on what the city's needs are so that we can test that correctly.
Okay, then that means that this survey will not start until after
right.
we have the final report from
right.
pavement engineering,
right.
Yeah.
if that's the company
but
we use.
What we're able to do is have basically the rest of the survey ready to go, and so as soon as that data is acceptable to all of you and you have some direction of what you want to test, we plug that in and we get
I
going.
See. Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Any others?
Well, now if you don't mind, one.
Yeah. No. Please.
Thank you.
That's what we're here for.
Sure.
So then you could pretty much do the framework and have pretty much the questions ready to go,
mm-hmm.
and then once we know what that number is or what the numbers are, then you would plug those in,
right.
and so we could pretty much be ready to just launch from
there. We would be ready to start probably the next day.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Zip it. I'm done.
Okay.
Then
thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to open this to the public. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to come forward? Seeing none, bring it back to the council. Any final comments?
Sure. It was an excellent report. I can see why you chose them. I'm very satisfied with what I've read, so I can support this.
Does that mean you're going to make a motion?
I will if folks are ready for that. No other comments? Just me? Okay, very good then. So I will. I'll make the motion that, if I can get back to where I need to be, that.
I can make the motion and you can second it if you like.
I'm here. thank you, though. That we adopt the resolution authorizing the city to enter into an agreement with FM3 in an amount not to exceed $20,000.
And I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Bright and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes, that's unanimous. So the final item on our regular business agenda this evening is the authorization to enter into a consultant contract for pavement management system update. And this time we're going to be hearing from Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray.
Condition data, prepare an updated pavement management system, and to develop project scenarios specifically for the bond measure and polling we were discussing the previous item. The city did go out for proposals and received five qualified proposals in February. And similar to the process used to select the bond polling consultant, we used an in-house proposal ranking team. And we ranked the five proposals. Two of the proposals really came out on top, very close to each other. And in particular, one of the proposals was determined to be the best value for the city. Looking at, you know, obviously city council's identified street repairs as one of council's highest goals. And, you know, the problem we all know is that unfortunately the city doesn't really receive enough income to keep up with the rate of street deterioration. So as a result, you know, a significant number of the city streets are now in poor to very poor condition. Back in January 21st, City Council heard an analysis of various funding options and ultimately directed staff to prepare a bond survey to determine if the city's residents would support a major financing measure for repair of the city streets. In order to provide cost information for this, we need to have accurate data. So what we're looking for is a consultant to basically gather data, and not just pavement condition data, but also looking at original drawings to determine the age of various street construction processes, and working with staff to identify recent street projects and to download additional information such as functional classification, traffic counts, critical data that all needs to be put together to make an accurate determination of the cost of various repair scenarios. Also included in that, we will need to have destructive testing. The term's a little misleading maybe, but destructive testing basically means that we would do some pavement deflection analysis and some coring samples of the actual pavement segments in different areas throughout the city. All that data together can be input into the pavement management program, and then together that will help us answer the question how much can be done at various costs, and looking at some of the possible funding scenarios that we've been considering. The firm that system output, they basically said, we'll provide the following five outputs. And our request for proposal was very specific. We said we're looking for some sort of random outputs that you ordinarily wouldn't get from a pavement management system in the typical sense of the fashion. If council were to approve our selection of Pavement Engineering Incorporated, we would negotiate a contract this week and hopefully have that approved by next week. And the approval of the contract would be subject to approval by the city manager and the city attorney to both form and content. Pavement Engineering Incorporated has indicated that they could begin work within 10 days. I didn't include in the staff report the schedule, and that's been one of your questions that have come up earlier tonight. I'll mention that in their proposal, Pavement Engineering Incorporated indicated that we should be able to be looking at funding scenarios and strategies by mid-May. So they have a very aggressive schedule proposed, and that fits well with the question we're trying to answer, and that is by having information to our polling consultant thereabouts in May. Staff has identified a couple of alternatives for council to consider. That's really to adopt a resolution authorizing staff to enter into a consulting contract with Pavement Engineering Incorporated for development of the pavement management system, or simply to provide some alternate direction to staff. We are recommending that council adopt the resolution authorizing us to enter into the contract. And I'll mention on the tail end of that Council originally approved a budget of $60,000 to update the pavement management system. The proposal from PEI was $28,720 was the estimated total, but that does not include the destructive testing. We could either have Pavement Engine Incorporated conduct and manage the destructive testing portion, or we could go directly to a soils engineering firm, which may be more in line with what a soils engineering firm typically does. At any rate, staff's estimate is that the combination of both services would be well within the available budget. So again, staff is recommending that council adopt the resolution authorizing staff to enter into the consultant contract with PEI. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you.
Or do you know?
I think I do know. I think it goes back to the other question. Basically, development of a pavement management system is a pretty specific process. You go out, you do data collection of pavement, visual condition. You put all that data into a database, and you spit out some very specific system-level funding scenarios. How many years at our current funding per year would it take to get all the pavement up to acceptable value? What if we spent all the money now? How much money would it cost? What if we did nothing? How long would it take for all of our pavements to reach a certain point? And that's pretty typical, what you see of almost all pavement management systems. And what they'll all tell you, the professionals and the consultants will tell you that, well, if you want to know project-specific data, like exactly how much is it going to cost and exactly what street should I do a full overlay and what street should I completely remove and replace, well, that data isn't complete enough. So I think what you got out of all but really one proposal was we're going to give you the typical pavement management system output. And so why would we include deflection testing and core sampling? Because that doesn't really generate anything. That generates something different than the typical output, a system-level analysis. We're wanting more than a system-level analysis. So one of the other firms, the second scoring firm, indicated that if we were interested in those kinds of testing, that they could provide them, and they provided some prices of what they might be, but it wasn't included as part of their proposal and cost of services.
So we didn't ask for that then? That wasn't in our scope of services?
We specifically said that we would be needing to generate, we'd be doing destructive testing, coring, and deflection testing to determine project-level costs. That was really important. And so PEI recognized that, but I think in order to be competitive, they didn't include it either. That's my understanding.
Okay. So then the schedule was included, by the way, in their proposal.
That's correct. It's scheduled in there.
So they have an 11-week schedule. So where, if we were to go with, which it seems to me we would need to do that, would we be able to work that into this 11-week schedule, or would that be on top of the 11-week schedule?
No, we would coordinate it with the 11-week schedule. I think around week three, we'd be looking at when they generated enough pavement to the initial funding scenarios. So
right,
there's work after that where they would come and potentially make a presentation to council and provide an actual report and all that. But they're getting quickly to the questions and answers that we're hoping to get.
Okay, good. Well, that's very promising. Okay, those were my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of staff?
Just two quick ones. So that May 12th date corresponds acceptably with what FM3 had indicated would be the kind of the kickoff point for their polling.
Yes, we met earlier today with FM3 and went over that exact scheduling.
Okay, gotcha. And then my last question is something I'd kind of alluded to in an email to earlier today, is what are the residents going to notice or what are they going to see as a consultant that's going around town? And it sounds like it might be a vehicle with a Google-type camera on top for them to do their research and so forth, but it's not going to be disruptive to the residents or anything of that nature, correct?
Not disruptive, but it might be curious. I mean, really, would be a safety vehicle, flashing lights, caution, with a live person walking the streets and doing actual visual surveys of different sections of streets. So someone's going to get a lot of walking in, and they might be curious to see a truck driving down the street with a person, following a person with a wheel going down the street and measuring and taking data. But I think the truck will be identified as a PEI truck. And
so I noticed that I think in their budget scenario they had approximately 46 hours to conduct the street surveys. So yeah, someone's going to get a lot of walking in for an entire
fast.
Week. Yeah, for a little yes. over a week. Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, in that case, I'm going to open this to public comment. Is there anyone from the public who wants to comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back. And are there any comments or discussion? I wanted to say thank you. That was a really thorough report and high level. And I think that I'm also very grateful to you for holding the contractor's feet to the fire and getting what we wanted and what we need for the public. So thank you for that.
Good. I'll move for staff's recommendation.
And I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Marshall and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. And those of you who sat out there so patiently through the whole meeting, we will go ahead and hear the report on item number 8, which is the second reading of Ordinance Number 1401 to amend Section 3999 of Chapter 16 of Article 3 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code and Resolution amending the map of protected locations. And this is Police Chief Assistant City Manager Copsey presenting.
And I'll be happy to present it or answer any questions if you wish. If you'd like me to present it, I can.
Any questions on the ordinance?
No. Who pulled it?
It was pulled by two members of the public who sent in speaker slips. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, in that case, then let's have the public come forward and tell us what they think, and we'll talk to you again if we need to. Thank you. I'm going to open for public comment, and we have Frank Lindsay and Janice Bellucci, so it looks like Mr. Lindsay is up first.
Thank you, ma'am. Council, Mayor, pleasure. Frank Lindsay, 356 North 16th Street, Grover Beach, member, board member, California Reform Sex Offender Laws. We have been working diligently to reform some of the complicated laws that have been put into place regarding those that are 290 registrants in this state. Those folks have an incredibly difficult task in front of them in recovery. We should not make it more complicated. You have indicated at the top of your map that these are protected locations. Unfortunately, this is giving a false sense of security to folks in the community that they are safe from those that might occur a sexual grievance against someone. When in fact, we know that those that have offended in the past, and these are not our statistics, this is from CDCR, California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, that those that have offended in the past, their likelihood of reoffense is 1.9%. Federally, FBI statistics, they suggest almost 5%. This is a lot more than what the hysteria has been played out on television, that 100% all the time reoffend. That's not the case. Powerful testimony last week up in Sacramento from a lady and her daughter. They had moved into Roseville. They had made absolutely sure that it was, or in the circle of the family, it's not the red dots. We need to be whole and healthy, all of us, including those, and stable, all of those that have crossed the line in the past and are looking to heal their lives and be productive citizens in our community. By banishment, we're not allowing that to happen in our community. And I think our community's got a more open heart than that. We need to welcome everyone, including those that need to recover. Who's truly more of a risk for reoffense is a drunk driver. Would we banish them from our community? I think not. Please pull this for more considerations. I am open. You can call me anytime. I live locally, and we can talk about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we have Janice Bellucci, who came a long way tonight to talk to us.
Well, thank you, Mayor Peterson and members of the City Council. I'm here today on behalf of the California Reform Sex Offender Laws Organization, which is a statewide nonprofit. I'm also the mother of two, and I'm a grandmother. I really care about the safety of children. And as I've watched your deliberations today, I'm really struck by the fact that you seem to be heart-centered and also thoughtful in the actions that you're taking. And so I really would like to repeat what I said in my letter, which is to ask you to stop and to take more thought, more time to think about the repercussions about what you're about to do. While you may be well-meaning, you may have exactly the opposite effect of what you hope to do, and that is to protect the kids. I'd like to share with you a quotation from a September 2011 report by the California Sex Offender Management Board, and that board is, in fact, the state of, experts on the subject of sex offenders, and they had a report here about residency restrictions in particular. And this is a quote from their report. Residency restrictions have not improved public safety and have compromised the effective monitoring and supervision of sex offender parolees. That's the Sex Offender Management Board. So I can tell that you all care a lot, too, about fiscal impact, and I want you to know that cities have been sued for passing residency restrictions like that. I am an attorney. I have sued for a great in excess of $5,000. And lastly, I'd like to say that Patty Wetterling, whose 11-year-old son was kidnapped in 1989, and so she's somebody who's been directly affected by this topic. This is her quote. Because residency restrictions have been shown to be ineffective at preventing harm to children and may indeed actually increase the risk to kids, the Jacob Wetterling Resource Center does not support residency restriction laws. Such laws can give a false sense of security while sapping resources that could produce better results used elsewhere. Again, I ask that this council reconsider and not adopt the ordinance tonight. I am available as a resource. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else from the public who'd like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the council. Did that bring up any questions? Did anyone have any further questions of Chief Copsey?
I'd like him to address those issues if he can.
Absolutely. I can address several of the issues, and I strongly support some of the comments that were made. This is not an issue that goes lightly discussed and decided upon. I do not agree with all of the statements, but I think residency restrictions are applicable in certain cases. Ours is a little different than what a number of the other cities have adopted and the times that they have adopted and what the reasons are. Ours is specific to crimes against children, and it does follow within the specific state laws regarding Jessica's Law. Consulted with a city attorney on some of the case laws that have come up in the past, and ours is, our residency restrictions are a little bit different. They're not in excessive of, in addition to, or in excessive of the state laws. Our goal is to protect the children, and this gives us one tool to do that. Yes, sex crimes will occur against children. This will not prevent that. So I do agree with some of those statements. Most of the crimes against children are family situations, and a lot of the crimes are ones that aren't ones that we know about. And I think part of that reason is, and I know in our case, and I can only speak for the city of Grover Beach, and the ones that we have and the ones that we keep track of and that we monitor and that we support by monitoring and supporting them with what they do, prohibit the protected areas from living in those areas, which has been brought to our police department and to the city in the past by residents in those areas requesting that we support this. So we have, although we don't have them here tonight, we have a considerable amount of people that support the residency restrictions. Some of it may be driven by fear. I don't dispute that. Some of it is driven by, you know, the fact that they don't want sex offenders living in their backyard or next door to them. But the fact still remains that there are some cases where offenders do reoffend in their neighborhoods, and that's what we would like to prevent. And if we can prevent that 1.9% or 5% or whatever percent it actually is, then we should do that. So it is, you know, it's not a preventative measure against all the other sex offenders, though. So with that, I don't if there's other questions, the attorney might be able to answer some of the other questions regarding some of the legal lawsuits. We're always, almost always, susceptible to lawsuits in the law enforcement field. We try and do the best job that we can when we do actions. Nothing will prevent us from being sued in any case, whether it's this one or something else. And we will do our diligence before we take action on any matter against an ordinance or against restricting somebody's residency. So I don't know if the city attorney, if you have any other questions regarding that type of a, if you might say, comments made regarding suing the city.
Any other questions from council?
Yes.
I do.
Please go forward.
Thank you. When we discussed this previously, we did talk about current residents. So folks that currently reside where they reside, they're going to be able to continue to reside.
Absolutely.
Where they reside. So we're not banishing those folks.
I mean, correct.
People who live there, they have a family home, they're able to continue to stay in their home.
And it actually spells that out in the ordinance. It does. They're grandfathered in, as Jessica's law was at
okay.
the time.
I'm wondering, though, in this first paragraph, it says the rates are as high as 45% to reoffend. I wonder
in which first paragraph are you
under
referring to?
In the ordinance. I'm sorry, I'm looking at it. I figure you know what I'm looking at.
No.
I understand. Okay, those were my questions, I believe. Thank you.
Any other questions? I had one question, or I guess one clarification. So what we're saying then is that we're only restricting offenders who have offended with individuals under the age of 18.
Yes.
And I think that a very important point was made. This doesn't make us safe. Doesn't make anyone safe.
That's correct. And they still can move about the city as anybody else can legally.
Right.
We're not,
right.
Yeah. They're not restricted from attending the parks. There are some restrictions on attending the schools with notice, but that's a separate issue.
Are there restrictions for people who've offended with people over 18?
Yes.
So those are the 1,000-foot restriction?
No, they still have, technically they mm-hmm. still have Jessica's law. All offenders that are required to register under the Megan's law have the 2,000-foot residency restriction. The issue is there's not any enforcement actions on that with the state law. So if somebody moves into town, we have, you know, we can tell them you're in violation of Jessica's law, but there's not a whole lot we can do about it unless it's part of their probation or parole and they adhere to it in that fashion.
So this just puts teeth in it where children are concerned.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Comments?
Comments?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the things that concerns me, if anybody was opening themselves to litigation, by looking at the map, I think Grover Beach is doing so. If you'll look at the map that was provided with the report, there is virtually no place in Grover Beach that one can move or live. And I can appreciate the restrictions, but I think if it gets to the point where you're telling people you can't live in this city, there's no place in this city that isn't covered by one of those circles. That causes me great concern. I think we're looking for trouble under those circumstances. That bothers me.
And I have a tendency to agree with you. However, I think we did talk a little bit about that at our last meeting, and the chief did mention that there are a handful, less than a handful of areas within the city that would be outside the circle.
I think we're looking at state laws, as Pro Tem Lee has mentioned, and I don't really see an issue with it. It's something that I understand the residents of the city want, and so I will definitely support moving forward with this.
Is there any chance that I would ask the young lady, have you any idea when the Supreme Court is going to come down with their decision?
Could you come forward and answer that? Thank you.
Councilman Nichols, I guess you're referring to the fact that the issue of residency restrictions and whether or not they're constitutional is, in fact, before our state Supreme Court right now. So there are two cases pending. One is People versus Mosley. The other one is In re Taylor. And no, I can't predict when they will make a decision, but we hope it's relatively soon. And I will tell you, I have read the brief submitted by the Attorney General herself. Her argument is that they are constitutional, but that they only should apply to registrants while they're on parole, not while they're on probation, and not any time beyond parole. That's what's in front of our Supreme Court right now.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks.
Maybe I do have a question then of her. Is there a sunset clause on this? Is it only while they're on parole, or is it for the life that they have to register?
The two cases are distinguishable from our facts, both the Mosley case and the Taylor case. They deal with, as the chief identified, one of them deals with the registration being required as additional punishment. In other words, it is not a not under the state law, but under basically a parole condition, registration was issued. And the other case is also distinguishable. And this, the distinction escapes me, and I apologize for that.
Okay.
But you've been provided with a memo
right.
on the subject, and they are. This is not our situation in the city. For the record, the 2,000-foot restriction does not preclude residency in the city of Grover Beach. It is consistent with the state law, and as we've stated during the public hearing at the last meeting, it is something that staff recommends, but it is something that you can control.
Right. For those reasons,
and adopt the ordinance amending the residency requirements for Penal Code 290 registrants, and adopt the resolution amending the map showing the revised distance from restricted properties subject to the ordinance.
So we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Second by Councilmember Marshall.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, I would recommend two separate votes, one on the second reading of the ordinance and second on the adoption of the resolution.
Okay. So
I have just made two motions.
Are you seconded?
In 2 seconds.
Okay. So let's hear the first one, or let's have a roll call in the first one.
Yes.
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 No.
Yes. So that was a 4 in favor, 1 opposing, and that was Councilmember Nichols opposing. And the second one?
Yes.
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 No.
Yes, same thing. We had 4 in favor, 1 opposed, Councilmember Nichols. And we're moving now to business tax certificate reports, third and fourth quarters of calendar year 2013. And I believe, Councilmember Nichols, you had asked that we pull that one? That's
correct.
Item number 10 under the consent agenda.
Madam Mayor,
yes.
Would the council like a staff report or just ask a question?
I'm not sure because I
don't think we need a staff report.
Okay.
May I?
Yes, please.
Yeah, my only concern is I've been on the council, as you all know, for a number of years. We get this report on, I believe it comes out on a quarterly basis, if I'm not mistaken. I have looked at it from time to time. I don't think it provides any real significant information. I've never had any of the council members discuss the report. from time to time in all the years that I've been here, and I honestly think that putting it out in this manner with printing all of the names of the businesses that have taken out a current license is a waste of paper and a waste of that we should not endure. If anybody has a concern or an interest in taking a look at all of the new licenses that have been issued, that's available through our staff to any one person. And they could...
Administrative Director Chapman to come forward and let us know how much time it takes to print this out. Obviously, it's paper. We can't argue that.
The total time to do the staff report probably takes about an hour. Then there's review by city management office. Then if there's any changes, it comes back. Then it goes back over. So probably an hour to 2 hours each time that it's presented.
Stay there for a second. Would you concur with that, city manager?
Yes, I would. I just want to reflect. We began doing this just by way of history back during the recession. And the purpose was simply to update the council on the number of new business licenses that were being issued as a point of information.
Well, I like to get that information. I mean, I'm not saying that I need to get all of this, although when I get it, I do look through it. But, I mean, I think knowing how many new business tax certificates that we get each quarter, I think is interesting and something that we should know.
And the one thing the report does not show is the businesses that have left. And that would take a lot of staff time to track whenever we're notified that a business has left. And then once a year after we do renewals, we close any businesses that have not renewed. So if you, to get the even more in-depth picture, you would need that information, which would take more staff time.
So at the end of the year?
We'll be closing businesses in April that have not paid for this year.
And so would that be a time-consuming?
It's kind of a time-consuming process.
Once a year, maybe? Figured out how many new business tax certificates we got and how many businesses we lost.
However the council would like
to see. I don't know.
Is it part of the budget? I mean, you report on...
No, it's not, you know,
other than the revenue line.
The revenue line item, and we know approximately how many we issue, but...
But we don't know how many we've lost.
Right. As I've said, this was for informational purposes at the time.
So remind me how many times a year we look at this, the council sees this?
I try to do it 4 times a year. This one, of course, has 2 on it. Just time got away from me, and I put 2 together on one report.
So just for my interest...
I'll be closing that shortly. It would be hard to tell. I would have to actually look at physically which ones are closed.
So this covers a 6-month period, and it was roughly 85 new registrations. Is that right?
Well, there were 85 for one quarter and 59 in the other.
Okay. So which had 85? No, 59 was for the Christmas period.
59 was for the Christmas period. The 85 was for the third quarter ended September 30th.
Oh, the period prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Which is a trend you might expect, that it slows down a little over the holiday period. But if we're talking about 85, that's almost one a day. There are 90 days in a quarter. It's almost one a day coming in.
And at that time, some of them could be associated with the holiday event that we have in the park.
Mm. Okay.
Oh, the craft fair?
Mm-hmm.
The Santa's workshop thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess it would be a really easy rule of thumb to look at if there were 60 during the second quarter. That's like one every... my math's escaping me. But every day and a half, Jeff says. Thank you. So you'll probably have a sense of whether you're getting one a day. You know, you'll probably get a feel for if it's picking up, because if you've got more than one a day or more than 2 a day, you're certainly picking up.
Yeah, but if the whole council doesn't want to receive this and someone would just like to come in and check to see how much, we could do that also, to see how many new businesses there are.
Is there any other
It would take a lot of staff time to put together the, if we were to also include those businesses that have gone out.
So there's no one out there from the public. So, oh, there is, yeah, well, there are two people and they're shaking their heads no. So thank you for sticking around, you guys. And so I am not going to bother to open public comment on this consent agenda item. However, if is there any more discussion from?
I had one possible discussion, and I don't, Councilman Nichols, I don't know if this goes to potentially the direction where you were thinking of going, but would it be necessary or appropriate to possibly get a copy of the staff report every 6 months and not the backup, so that we see the numbers that come in, and then maybe have the backup, the names on the website available for review, so it saves the paper that you're looking for, but we still get the information that might be of interest to whoever. I don't know if that.
And on the Planning Commission, I've been asking for more information. I've been saying, I want to know who we're losing. I want to know who's coming back. And I go over it with a fine-tooth comb because economic development's our number one priority. I want to know who's coming to town. I want to know what their names are. I want to know if it's someone I can do business with to support the community. So for me personally, it's really important. And I'm glad that it's going back and forth between members of the city so that staff, so that you guys know too, so that we can be supportive of our businesses. So I would like to see more information, but I would be willing to concede for the sake of five pages on both sides. I'd be willing to move those pages into maybe twice a year reports or even once a year report, although I'd rather see at least twice and perhaps have a more in-depth report once a year so that we have an idea of who's coming in and who's going out, what's our net gain or loss.
That is doable.
I think it's important. Mm-hmm. It is, I think.
So, Gail, you said you could, if a councilman person came in, we could, you could just print out the list mm-hmm. of the business, and that's not time consuming at all.
It's not very time consuming.
And so that would give us the list to look at mm-hmm. who's new in town and go welcome them. The report, I can see both arguments. I have no strong opinion one way or the other on it. I'd like to make sure that staff isn't being overworked. I don't think we need to give them they don't need to generate a full-blown report. If it's simple, I'm fine with it.
I'm amenable either way. So whether it's just a staff report, so I don't have a strong feeling either way. So I mean, it's useful information, but mm-hmm. I think it can be found either on the website or by coming in and requesting it from staff. Let me jump in just mm-hmm. one last item. So if we did ask you for a report, you could give us the report at the end of the first quarter with everyone, even those who haven't paid, in the third quarter, so we could, if we wanted to go through it and see who has left or who has not.
It would be easier to give a once-a-year report as to who has left at the June 30th quarter end.
Sort of around budget time, which I think is helpful mm-hmm. in focusing our thinking with our priorities.
I just do that one.
I'd still like to hear maybe twice a year at the year end have a
more in depth,
and maybe halfway through the year, let's look at who the businesses are. We should go ahead and we don't have consensus. We've got two folks who aren't too fussed. We've got one guy who's really against it, and we've got two folks who would like to continue to have information. So I think maybe we should have a vote on it because we're not able to give clear direction to the city manager.
Well,
to staff.
Twice a year mm-hmm. now is what I've heard, one of them being a more formal report. Mm-hmm. But as long as staff doesn't have to spend a day, I'm thinking a couple hours to put together.
How much time are we talking about once a year then?
Once a year, mm-hmm. I would say total.
To give us the, you know, who's at the end of the year to give us the review of
who's new and who's gone.
It's the who's gone that's going to be a little more difficult. I'm going to say maybe a total of 4 to 5 hours at most.
So that's a big
do you
staff.
Do it, or do you have staff who can?
I actually run the reports and okay. do this.
So is it really that important to see who's gone? I mean, other than the numbers.
Numbers all I care about.
Yeah, only mm-hmm. the numbers. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't need to know who,
part of seeing who's gone, if somebody came in to do a one-time job for construction, they're going to show as being gone the mm-hmm. next year.
Yeah.
We don't send out renewals for one-time jobs.
Right.
But if we're seeing it year on year, we're going to see a trend.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is true as well.
So it's the one-time jobs that are going to be a little misleading.
Is there a better indicator, Bob?
I think the revenues.
Yeah.
Well, you certainly, you know, I'm struggling with it a bit, but but there is, it really depends on, I think the genesis, and going back to this, was really more than just seeing who came and who left, who was brand new, and, you know, at a time when we were trying to encourage business to be coming in, it helped to know what kind of progress we were making. And that's the basic issue for the report. As Gail has indicated, I don't know that there's any better way to show it. As she said, I don't know that receiving the tail end report would, because of the issue where you have an individual, those businesses that are here once and are gone may skew the information. So I don't know how much more valuable that would be.
Yeah.
So my suggestion would be to continue with what we're doing, and then obviously as part of the budget process, you're going to review the numbers, and you'll know whether there was an increase from year
to year. Ask who it is, because the Pepsi vendors might not like her, but could you please pass on our, well, my, I won't speak for everybody, well, his and mine, could you please pass our thanks to her for a little additional income and for taking the initiative?
She looks at fictitious business name statements every day in the paper, so she does go after looking for the new businesses, and a lot of them apply mainly based on her initial letters to them.
We like that woman.
Yeah, excellent.
Great. Tell her thank you. So,
she's also your employee of the year for City Hall. So. Oh.
And rightly so, apparently. So, do you want to do this, say, just twice a year?
I'm okay with twice a year. I just need to see who it is, because I do follow it, and I will follow up with the people.
So, would you like me to try to get the ones that are no longer doing business?
I think we've agreed that the numbers will tell the story.
Okay,
that's
great.
Fine.
Actually, I have a quick question, and I apologize. My brain is stuck on who would be a one-off business that we wouldn't go back and send a renewal possibility notice to.
Someone that comes in as a contractor or a plumbing contractor that normally does not do business in town. Say they're from Bakersfield, they come over to do a one-time job.
But contracts that you approved today would be a good example of that.
Yes.
Good point. Okay.
That's true.
That's
Thank
true.
You.
Yeah. Okay.
That we're doing the economic generation there.
Here we are.
Good. I hope they stay and shop here. Thank you.
Are we printing out the names as well, or just?
I want to see
report?
The names, because if I don't see the names, I can't go say, hey, thanks for coming to our town to do business.
Okay.
I need to see the names.
I'll plan on doing them in July and in January.
Great.
So Bill, we'll cut it in half.
10 pages, not 20.
Don't give them to Bill.
10 sides. Yeah, don't give them to Councilmember Nichols. He doesn't want to see them.
And I don't need the names either. Just
I need them. All righty. Let us move on. We are now to council committee reports. And Councilmember Bright, do you have anything to report tonight?
I don't. Unfortunately, I was ill for the Housing Trust Fund meeting. And as a matter of fact, apparently I wasn't the only one. They didn't have a quorum, so...
Oh.
The meeting did not happen, so, yeah. Anyway, but I do have two later on this month, so I'll report on those at our next meeting. Thank
Great.
You.
And Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
I did have one for the Integrated Waste Management Authority, and I didn't have one for the way that the county in and of itself will achieve that will be through food diversion and food waste collection. Which is still being talked about as one of potential locations, either out by the airport or some other facility closer to San Luis Obispo, where either Cold Canyon or something north of the grade. But overall,
were in excess of state law. We're probably in the top three, if not the top diversion group, based upon the activities that we've done over the course of the last 14 years or 9 years, whatever it is. And then one item that you may have seen in the paper was discussed at the meeting itself, but there was a editorial in the Tribune where someone from San Luis Obispo wants the city of San Luis Obispo to start to ban polystyrene. It's not something that the Integrated Waste Management Board is going to take up at immediately, but if there is a groundswell or a grassroots effort to move forward with that, then they might take that up at that point, and then I may come back to you and say, how do we want to proceed with this? But at this point, they're waiting to see what the city of San Luis does and if there's any groundswell coming forward. And then the last item is there is a project coming down the pipe in the county itself for called the Bunyan Project for a green waste diversion, because there is some discussion as to the state board may begin to prohibit, I believe in 2017, green waste as alternate daily cover. So in which case, what's being used as alternate daily cover currently on the landfill will then now not be allowed to be put in there, and so we'll need a larger composting facility. So, fascinating discussion on why green waste is good and or bad for alternate daily cover, but I won't bore you with that this evening.
Great report. Thank you. Very thorough. Fascinating. Councilmember Marshall.
Sure. I had a South San Luis Obispo. No, I can't. That was actually, my meeting was very short. It was South San Luis Obispo Sanitation District. It was on March 5th. There's another one this Wednesday at Arroyo Grande City Hall, and that starts at 6 o'clock for anybody who's interested in coming. Yeah. Very interesting. But March 5th, it was a very short meeting. I wasn't able to attend
right.
that one.
The chief went to that. Is there anything we need to know about?
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Thank you, Chief.
You look so comfortable back there.
Yeah, this is very comfortable seats. I did not bring any materials, but it was a fairly short meeting. We discussed. They actually brought two new board members on that were approved, and they approved a grant to move forward to recommend to the Board of Supervisors for veterans process, which was a good grant. And they also discussed they have a subcommittee, which is a supportive services subcommittee, that made some recommendations regarding sending a letter to all the cities for the planning departments to support some ideas for their upcoming zoning ordinance. So that will be coming to our planning department. I've already provided it to them, but it provides some, you know, additional, like second granny unit type low income housing ideas to maybe be included, which wasn't necessarily supported by everybody, but it moved forward to send at least four options to the cities, and that was about it.
Thank you. That's interesting.
Yes. And actually, before you leave, Chief, did I see something somewhere that they're about to have another stand down day? And do you recall?
Yes. And I don't recall what the date is. Okay. I will try and find out real quick and provide that.
I know it's sometime in May, but I don't recall the date.
Thank you. All righty. Where are we? Councilmember Nichols.
No, I do not have any. I have a meeting Friday for the fire district. And the transit doesn't meet until next month.
Actually, I had a question for you on the transit. We had a public speaker here this evening saying that there was some – is the concern over the smoking in the park and the homeless impacting the SCAT drivers? Is that a topic of discussion?
That's the first I've heard of it. I made a note of it. I will check and find out if that is something. I can tell you that they have a meeting with the drivers. It's something new that was set up 4 or 5 months ago on a regular basis, and the drivers all air their concerns.
Now, my understanding is that the League of Women Voters is counting, but can you shed any light on that? Do you have any more information on that?
Yeah, you're correct. The League of Women Voters is going to do the counting. No, the fire department is not going to have people standing around looking at the ballots, counting them, writing down names. No.
They don't get to keep them afterwards. Okay.
That is correct.
So it will remain confidential.
Absolutely.
As with most other votes.
Yeah. And okay. I have heard people complain about that also. And I guess they overlook the fact that when they vote by mail, they have to sign the envelope and mail it in. Same thing. When you go to the poll to vote, do you not sign your name when you go in the poll? They didn't mention that either.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Could I ask the chief to come up? He can talk a little bit about the evidence room that we're using to secure it.
Great. Yes.
Yeah, just real briefly, the League of Women Voters is picking up the ballots from San Luis Obispo, where they all go, through the post office. She does not open them. She brings them in a locked box. She carries them downstairs into our evidence locker. We do not even get to touch them to put them in there, and she puts them in and then leaves with them. So nobody from the fire department is involved at all. They don't have access. I don't even have access to our storage. So it is very secure.
Thank you very much. That's very encouraging. I appreciate that. Now, I had another question that was a cause for concern, and that was about the 4% annual increase. And again, I recall reading it, and I recall that it requires a public hearing. Is there... I believe it required a public hearing. Is it an automatic 4%, or does it have to have a public hearing first?
Thank you. My understanding is that whatever the assessment is proposed, including CPI increases or whatever increases set in, that is what the public is voting on. So, and yes, there's a public hearing required, and obviously the public hearing will take place to announce the results and basically have the board consider the assessment. But with regard to annual public hearing, once in place, there is no need for another hearing or vote on it. Similarly with our CPI increases in the Prop 218 water rates and any of those type of regular measurable increases that have been voted on, you do not need.
I don't know about the 4%. I never heard
that. I don't have the language of the proposed
and
ballot, so
and it is Jim not knows. It is not automatic. It would have to come before the board,
yeah, this can be a public
and the
hearing.
Board would have to vote on it before it is in effect.
The CPI? Now that's
no.
just the.
The
I thought
the CPI increase. Any increase based on the CPI, and you cannot increase any more than what the CPI is.
And that's similar to what we did tonight with our
exactly.
master fee schedule.
Right. And, yes. and except that, and again, I do not know the language of the ballot, so from that standpoint, I can't speak to the actual language. But generally speaking, a CPI increase does not need to be. Revisit it. Now, it may be so that the ballot says, the language of the ballot says that the board will take action every year to see whether or not the increase is needed, in which case that's what's going to happen.
That is correct.
You don't need to go through an assessment, through another vote. It comes
but
to
that
the
is
board,
a public
board,
hearing.
Yeah, and the board decides correct. Whether or not they need the increase to be in put in place.
Okay.
Correct.
Is that, Chief,
is that, right,
is that your take on it?
Basically, yes. But where the 4% comes is that is the maximum that they will go to.
So it is a not to exceed.
It is a Southern mm-hmm. California CPI index that we all use around here. And, you know, whatever that is what the increase may be. But it will not be the maximum. It will go up. If it goes up at all, the maximum would be the 4%. And that might be where they're getting the 4% yeah. from. It's not an automatic.
Correct.
So if the CPI went up to 12, they could only go up to 4.
Correct.
So I have another question, Councilmember Nichols. I understand that the fire department absolutely cannot promote this. They can only provide information. Is that also true of the board?
No.
Well, here's the reason I'm asking the question, maybe it's more fair to explain this, is that there is misinformation out there. There are, you know, letters to the editors being written with this information. that I've asked about tonight. It's out on Facebook, and I'm just thinking it would do a great service to the public to have the accurate information out there. And I don't know if that's something you all can do or not, but...
Yes, I can, and I did. I went to almost all of the meetings with the fire chief, and at each and every meeting, at the very beginning of his presentation, he made the statement that I cannot be an advocate. I can give you the information from an educational standpoint, and that's what I will do. And if there are any questions that come up afterwards that requires an advocate, that's why I was there to respond to those questions. And there were some that I did respond to.
And I'm very aware that they did a lot of information, and you worked hard on that too. My question is, for right now, this is what I'm hearing out there now, that people don't understand this. They're saying what we're hearing is it's going up 4% every year, and what I'm hearing is that... that first question I asked, which I've now lost track of, I guess what I'm saying is there still seems to be misinformation out there, and I want to make sure that we have the right information about it. So that's all.
Depends on who you talk to, I believe, as far as right information. There are some people such as Otis Page and Julie Tacker that are putting out information that is not accurate.
That's my concern. So all I guess what I'm saying is an op-ed might be really helpful to the public to understand, to have the accurate information on that, because I'm sure getting beat up over it. So I'd really like to have the right information out there. Thank you. So, okay, let's get back on track. Did you have anything else to report, Councilmember Nichols?
That's it.
Okay. So on mine, I did have a Regional Transit Authority meeting, but there was nothing in it that can't wait till next week. And given the time and the fact that we've absorbed a lot of heavy-duty information tonight, I'm going to do that one next meeting on the 7th of April. And then we're moving then to council communications. Do we have any council communications?
I just had one. I had an opportunity to have coffee with Mayor Higginbotham from Pismo Beach, and I finally turned in an application to become a member of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition Board. So they were supposed to consider that this evening, but I'll let you know if that's successful or if they decide not to have me.
Great. Thank you for that information.
Just not doing enough, Jeff. Yeah.
Any other? Council Member Nichols, do you
I have one item. I would like to get the board consensus to... or the council's consensus, to put or bring back our capital improvement priority projects at the next meeting. I have been talking to the owner of the gas station at the corner of 7th and Grand, and 7th Street is in horrible condition. And thanks to, I believe, City Manager and Public Works Director, they have... put some hot patch or whatever you call it, cold patch, to fill the potholes over there. But that street, and I have driven Brighton Street and Nice, and in my opinion, neither of those streets are anywhere near as bad as 7th Street, one block off of Grand Avenue, from Grand Avenue up one block. I think it's critical for this council to take a look at that. We do have money available. I have talked to Public Works Director. There's his estimate, which is just off the top of his head, is that this project would cost somewhere between, I believe he said, $60,000 to $80,000. We do have money for street repairs. I believe the city manager informed me that we have
Mayor,
up to about...
we're not agendized.
I would caution the council. I think... what's before you is a request to agendize it, at which point in time?
Well, I'm giving them the reasons why I would like to see it on the agenda.
Okay, you've given us lots of good reasons, so let's see if we want to agendize that.
Oh, I'm open to it.
I agree.
I'd be willing.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's put it on the agenda and get a full staff report. Thank you.
So I'm clear, everyone's clear, we won't be bringing back the entire CIP. The only thing we'll be bringing back is the street improvement program and review the current priority listing versus the 7th Street improvement
project.
Thank you. That's
exactly what Bill said.
Yep.
That's exactly what we all said.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Well stated. Thank you very much. All right. So any other council communications? I went to a delightful lunch on Saturday, the SLO Commission on the Status of Women, and Jerry Rosen, Roseborough and her granddaughter, and she is our Parks and Rec Commissioner, were both also there representing Grover Beach, and we all went on our own dime, and it was a lovely lunch at Madonna, and very encouraging, except for the fact that women represent 50% of the workforce, and we're still only making 82% of the income that men are making. So that's we've got some ways to go there, and that was a very informative first annual lunch. I hope they'll do that again. Also, speaking of Parks and Rec, we had a couple of Parks and Rec meetings last week. We had the clean sweep meeting, and I think we decided that we were going to postpone that a little bit, but we're still going to work with, well, you know what, it was reported, could you clarify that, because it was reported in the Times Press Recorder that we were postponing it.
It's not actually mm-hmm. being postponed. Mm-hmm. What the group decided to do is, because the shortage of time, is just emphasize the activities that they could in conjunction with the South Sanitation Collection Week, which will occur the week of April 21st. So it's more publication and getting people to clean up their own areas during this time around. The subcommittee wants to focus a broader effort that would take place with the September cleanup. So
great.
That's the direction.
Thank you. Thank you. So, and for us, the pickup day is going to be the 22nd,
right.
Tuesday the 22nd. Along with that, we have April being our butterfly month, so we can have a full metamorphosis of the city. We can get it all cleaned up, and everybody's encouraged to put out butterflies during the month of April. And also, the Parks and Rec had a joint meeting with the City Council last week, and that was, I thought, a really constructive meeting. We addressed a number of issues, which would all be available probably at some point in their minutes or at their meetings. And I think that was all I had. City manager's reports and comments.
Just two quick items. One, the council had indicated an interest in giving the Elks Lodge a proclamation. That's going to be done on Saturday the 22nd. The mayor is going to attend. That's actually a dinner meeting. There's room for one or two additional individuals if you're interested in attending. The dinner will be hosted by the Elks Lodge, but I need to know if you're interested in attending, because obviously that's this Saturday.
And that's at the Elks Lodge in Oceano.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I am an elk. So.
Oh, so you'll probably attend as
am
well?
I an elk?
You're an elk?
Yeah, I think I am.
Wow.
I don't know. I can't remember. A moose, I know. An elk, I think. That's this Saturday?
Yes.
Can I call you tomorrow?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I won't possibly have a quorum, but if Councilmember Bright can't attend, then I'll go ahead.
It's not an issue.
I know it's a social event, but yeah, okay.
So if you want to go, you can.
Yes, go ahead and please indicate I'll be there then.
So okay. What time is it?
5 is the cocktail hour, 6 o'clock is the dinner, and the proclamation would be given as part of their program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Party on Saturday night at the Elks Club.
Lots of friends
okay.
there.
Lots of friends. City attorney's reports and comments.
Nothing now. Thank you very much, Mayor.
So then we move to city attorney again for closed session.
It is the intent of the council to meet in closed session on one item, and that is existing litigation, Vernon versus City of Grover Beach.
So it's 9:25. We're going to, I always forget that word.
Closed session?
No, we're not adjourning.
Well.
We're not adjourning. We're recessing. We're going to recess to closed session, and we'll be back and report.